Support for the Front Row on FM 89.1 comes from the Community Foundation of West Texas and from Citibank. Citibank's wealth management team of advisors, private bankers, and trust officers help customers create personalized strategies to help connect with long-term goals. More information on Citibank Wealth Management is available at 806-687-2955. And from Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vast opportunities abound in art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by vastly talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts, vastly different. Dr. William Wesney is presenting a solo piano recital in Himmler Recital Hall at the Texas Tech University School of Music this Saturday evening. We'll have all the details and a visit with Dr. Wesney on today's show. I hope you can stay tuned. On today's edition of The Front Row, we are in the studio of Dr. William Wesney, who is the Paul Whitfield Horn Professor of Piano here at the Texas Tech University School of Music. He's also the Ava Browning Artist in Residence here at the School of Music. And on a personal note, he was my piano teacher. And so it's a delight to be in the studio once again. Dr. Wesney, Bill, it's great to see you. Thank you for asking us to be in.
Oh, sure. I love that we have this continuity over the years, Clint. It's really so special, including not only working together on music, but the early fledgling days of the radio station are very dear to my memory, where we brought our old LPs in and played them, and it was on only certain hours a day. It was just great to be part of that.
Well, we of course appreciate every bit of support that you've been with us the whole way, and we really, really appreciate
that. It's great, so that's what it's come to.
Well, you are professor of music here at the School of Music, professor of piano. And you're offering a recital coming up on Saturday evening. Is that correct?
Saturday evening, the 9th of February, 8 p.m. It's in Hemley Recital Hall, which is 18th in Boston.
Right. Well, for folks who don't know and for whom this process is kind of mysterious, what do you do when you say, oh, I think I'm going to play a recital? What goes into forming a program?
It's a fascinating question, I have to say, and I guess everybody goes about it differently. It's usually about, in my traditional practice, an hour and a quarter of music, usually with an intermission. And so there's a vast amount of wonderful and incredibly elevated and sublime piano music, classical music to choose from. But it's always been intriguing to me to think, well, not just what pieces would be nice to tackle and play and explore, but what goes together into some kind of a unity. So it takes a while for me to figure out how it's going to work. I can equate it to maybe like what would a evening theatrical offering be like? What kind of pacing would you want for that? Or a movie that's about that long. Or, you know, and you've probably heard me say this before, you know, a meal, a satisfying, well-conceived dinner. What would that be like? So, I mean, there's a way in which I think there's an opportunity to make the pieces fit. And so, I often will think of, is there a big chunk, a big piece, a centerpiece that I'd like to do? And in this case, this particular program for this week is like that, because for various reasons I decided to return to pieces I hadn't played for many, many years, and it's an entire opus of Johannes Brahms, Opus 116. These are his late and very personal and very well-crafted and fascinating, absorbing piano pieces. So it takes a lot of focus for me and for the audience to, you know, explore that set together. And so that's the meat and potatoes of this particular thing. And then I think, well, what could go around it? So I always think that the pacing is important. When we've had an intense musical experience together with the audience, then we want something that's maybe a bit lighter after that. And you know, something, if something's very calm and meditative, then you want some things that are more lively and exciting, just that kind of variety. So what's going to happen Saturday? I open with a piece that's a little more substantial than I sometimes would open with. This is a piece by Felix Mendelssohn called Variations Sérieuses, Serious Variations. And, you know, it's a kind of, because it's a theme in variations, it's kind of an entertainment of a kind. And yet its mood is serious, and it's a virtuosic exploration of piano technique. But that's my opening piece. And then we settle in for the more sort of very profound thoughts of Brahms. That's the first half. Then we all need a little breather for all the right reasons, right. I'd like to hope.
Right.
And then, you know, there's variety on the second half. It starts with a lovely atmospheric and quite dramatic Nocturne by Chopin, and then I'm doing some sprightly and surprising and really fun to play short preludes by one of my very favorite American composers, Robert Muzhinsky. I've played his stuff many times over the years. It's really pianistic, meaning it fits the hands really well, and that's fun to offer to an audience. It's entertaining stuff. And then I'm ending with some Liszt. There's a beautifully warm and romantic Liebestraum, not the most famous one, but there's a set of pieces called Liebestraum, Dream of Love. So I'm doing number two, and then ending with one of the Hungarian Rhapsodies, number 11. So those are, you know, again, from a very high class, I would call it entertainment.
Right.
Pieces designed to be entertaining.
Right.
So that's the kind of variety that, and pacing that I try to arrive at. I'm so glad you asked me that question, because to me it's one of the most creative aspects of being a solo artist. And sometimes when we're in school in the conservatory, we play programs that have to check certain boxes. You have to do a Bach suite and then a Beethoven sonata, and it's good. I mean, you have to learn to play all these things,
right?
And then recital can be a little bit like, you know, going through these requirements,
right?
Whereas once you're out of school, you can just, you know, make anything you want out of a recital.
Right. Well, it sounds wonderful. Let's unpack a little bit of it. You're opening with the Mendelssohn, Serious Variations.
Yes.
Being Mendelssohn, I don't know the piece, but I'm guessing it's probably pretty facile, lots of notes, a lot, as you said,
it has
technique.
Some of that, you know, very notey and sprightly and, you know, whirling kind of atmosphere that you can get with Mendelssohn, but less than normal. I mean, there's a great variety of piano textures and techniques in this piece. Some of them kind of heroic, some of them very thoughtful. There's a kind of a very substantial feeling of the harmonies and this somewhat dark mood. It's really a pretty romantic and exciting piece. Not as sugary as some Mendelssohn might be.
Right, right. I know what you're talking about there. That's exactly right. The Brahms, this collection, Opus 116, this is actually a collection of several different pieces. Fantasies, intermezzi, is that right?
They're capriccios and intermezzos, but he calls them fantasies. So, you know, Brahms was a composer who never gave descriptive titles to any of his piano pieces. They're generic titles. Intermezzo is a catch-all title. It doesn't mean anything. It just means it's a short piece that does something.
Yeah.
And capriccio, something that's more energetic. But they don't tell us much, so that can be a wonderful opportunity. It's one aesthetic choice that composers can make, not to define anything. It's not a walk in the woods, and it's not a broken heart, and it's not a festival or in this village or anything that they're going to describe. It's just whatever it evokes in our psyche. So, you know, my hope there is to have it evoke a lot of things, whatever they might be. And of course, there's no right thing to think of, but it's music that is a bit surprising for Brahms, because one might think, because, you know, of all the romantic composers, he was the one who clearly was the master of large forms, complex structural forms, sonatas and symphonies and multi-movement works, as no one else except Beethoven before him could do. And he was a pianist. And so the piano was his own personal voice. And yet he stopped writing sonatas for piano very early on and never went back to it. And when he wrote these beautiful mature pieces, like I'm going to be playing this weekend, they're quite personal, and they're quite, I think, unguardedly revealing what's these tender, somewhat vulnerable feelings that this craggy, intimidating personage of Brahms clearly also wanted to share. And the way to share it was in the piano pieces. So they are, you know, Brahms' music in general is among the most, I would say, personal, unguarded type of expression we have in the Romantic era. Expressiveness isn't always of the same kind.
Right.
It can be
right.
Sometimes more sort of theatrical, like something you can imagine a ballet being danced to or something like that. These pieces aren't exactly like that. They're really inner explorations.
These are late, Opus 116, so these, in a way, are kind of like getting to the end, final thoughts, final expressions, I guess.
Final thought. It really does have that autumnal feeling about it, very much so, Clint. And it's also getting to the end a little bit of the Romantic, the great Romantic era, because some of them, one of the pieces, is clearly very experimental in terms of almost falling out of the tonal system.
Right.
It's doing such tricky things that we almost lost our idea of what key you're in. So Brahms was looking ahead in that way.
Right. Then in the second half, it's Mushinsky to begin, is that right?
Chopin.
Chopin, right, yes. Tell us about the Nocturne.
Well, it's a short piece, but it's a universe of things happening. It's like a complete sort of movie in one piece. It starts very mysterious, murky, you know, moonlight in the mist kind of thing, ambiguous, which is a beautiful romantic mood that, you know, some of these composers could establish. It's quite enchanting. But then there's a drama begins to unfold, and, you know, there's some climbing figures and more tension and intensity and a sort of outcry of feeling. And then somehow we burst into this happy place, and it's triumphant and jubilant, and everything's going to be good. But this being, you know, the heart of the romantic, it never stays like that.
Yeah.
We can have a memory of something happy, and we can have a dream of something happy, but usually our our home base is something else. It's something more melancholic and brooding. And so, sure enough, after a kind of a climax and an outcry of sudden despair, we go back to the mood we started in, this brooding. But yet it ends, thankfully, in a very consoling, sweet place. I just love the whole journey of that. It's really fun to do that, and it takes place in just about 4 minutes.
Wow. Bill, over the years, I've just loved these descriptions you have of these pieces. I think they're every bit as good as the music themselves, to hear you describe them.
Well, thanks. I mean, I'm sort of really glad to hear that. I mean, it's so satisfying to explore. What's the point of playing them if we don't have an idea what it is we're offering? And so I really enjoy exploring that and thinking of what it could be. You know, the additions, I grew up with these old Schirmer editions of Chopin, you maybe had them too, were edited by people who were quite shameless about this. I mean, you know, when I was going to school, we didn't talk this way about music.
Right,
they'd
right.
say, well, this is a Mazurka number 5 in A minor. Say, and then they'd say, here we see, you know, the craggy mountaintop, and there is a lone purple flower trying to survive. I mean, they're just making up this stuff, but they would offer it like, this is what the piece is about, with utter certainty.
Right.
And it's kind of inspiring.
Right. I know exactly what I've seen.
Yes,
those very same
you know
editions.
The ones I mean.
Right.
And maybe you're like me, like when you're a kid, it's like you think, wow, music is really about something. You can make some magic with it.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us about the Mushinsky pieces.
Well, Mushinsky was an American composer and died a handful, maybe 10 years ago at the most. And he was always, for a long time, on the faculty of University of Arizona, teaching composition. But turned out pieces that are played a lot, and a lot of them are piano-based, they feel great to play. They're full of humor and surprises and mood setting. What I love about them as modern music is they're so attractive and easily digestible, you know. He never overstays his welcome. Like, you know, he has a certain idea, works it out in entertaining fashion, and goes on to the next.
Right.
So, you know, it's so appealing in that way. And so that's what they're about, full of high spirits and surprises and contrasts.
And then you'll end with a couple of Liszt pieces that are completely different, I guess. The Liebestraum and then the Rhapsody.
The Rhapsody, right. The Liebestraum is set to a poem. You know, this kind of thing that was happening in the Romantic. And the poem is printed on the beginning of the music, so you can read it and be inspired. And it really is a love poem. It's a sensuous type of love poem. It's just about, you know, physical love and being in love, and that's what it's about. And so we really, using the word romantic in that way, it really is expressed as very warm and inviting and not complex at all in its thought, but it uses the piano in a gorgeous, gorgeous way. And then the Hungarian Rhapsody, you know, it follows the normal format. They take a while to get going. They tease you along. They know, you know, that it's that it's going to get sort of rousing at some point. But it doesn't happen for a while. But a lot of very scintillating things happen en route to that. And so it's quite entertaining all the time and full of this sort of gypsy-ish, you know, sense of swagger and you know, enchanting mood. And one of the features of this one, it has a kind of a tremolando effect at the beginning, this tremolo thing that we're told, you know, is meant to imitate a certain folk instrument that was Hungarian, called the cymbalum, which was kind of like a auto harp that you would play with mallets. Yes, yeah, and so it gives you this wonderful sort of, I don't know what to call it, but it's a quasi-percussion effect, but it's a kind of dreamy.
You know,
it's got a certain flavor. You can imitate that on the piano pretty successfully.
Right. Real so Hungarian, native Hungarian.
Very native Hungarian, yes. Yeah. We're really trying to do that. I mean, Liszt was really more of a Frenchman than that, but he was born in Hungary and very proud of it and, you know, and liked to evoke that rich folk culture in his music. And, of course, this gypsy flair is Hungarian flair is great to perform because it's got so much character.
Right. Tell us once again, time and date and place.
Saturday night, February 9th, 8 p.m. It's Hemley Recital Hall on campus, 18th and Boston.
All right. Well, we're here in your studio, and there's this beautiful Steinway piano in front of us. Could I entice you just to tease us maybe some little piece from the concert?
Well, sure, that would be great, and thank you for asking. I thought I would play one of the Brahms intermezzos. This is number 6 in E major.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Dr. William Wesney, playing music by Johannes Brahms. Today's edition of our program will be on our website later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm Clint Barrick. Thanks for tuning in and listening.